Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Penn State is going to the finals for the sixth time in the last 8 years. Big night for Klay Thompson with 32. A double-double for Looney. This crowd is back. They're on their feet, and their Warriors are going to the NBA Finals again.
Oh, yeah. Injected into my veins. That was delicious. A Dallas insect was stalked out, squished, destroyed. I am Paul Gallant. Josh Beard is filling in for Vanessa Richardson. Josh, how you doing
today?
Why
are you choosing violence to start the show, Paul? You know I'm bigger than you, right?
I do.
I will smother you right now.
Warriors did.
I am 295 pounds of Taco Bell, chicken quesadillas, and cake right now, and I will sit on you.
Okay, well.
That's hateful.
That's not going to change what happened, though. But look, you know, you are the resident Dallas Mavericks fan. How are you feeling, buddy?
I'm actually feeling pretty good. Like, I think that the series could have been a lot closer. I think game two of this series should haunt the Mavericks. This iteration of the Mavericks, Luka, Jason Kidd, I think it should haunt them. Okay, I see what we're doing. I think it should haunt them. That's game two is the type of game when you're up by 20 points that you can't let that game slide. You have to steal that game at Golden State. You can't give any quarter to a team like Golden State because then they'll do what they did to you. Steph Curry is somebody put it out there last night that Steph Curry, I think it was Kevin O'Connor on Twitter, said Steph Curry should be considered a top 10 player all time. Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think it was Roosh who said, okay, who are you going to move out of the top 10? And there's one name for me. Sorry, bring your pitchforks. It's Wilt Chamberlain. Move him out of the top 10.
Wow.
Steph Curry up in there.
We're coming in with tanks.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm impressed. See, I thought that you would get more mad when we played the sad violin as you talked through your feelings about the Mavericks, but okay.
It made me feel like I was in the Italian mafia talking about a job went wrong and how we're just going to get payback next time. Like, that's what the sad violin made me feel
like. Well, if the job goes wrong, I mean, there's not going to be payback next time. If you've watched Goodfellas, RIP to Ray Liotta, no,
right. You're
going to be brought into a room like Joe Pesci, and there's going to be nobody there as you get, quote, made, unquote.
I'm not the person who did the job. I'm the Don. I'm the boss.
Oh.
I'm the one who sent them on the job, and they didn't get it done. All right, so they're going to pay. We're going to put Dorian Finney-Smith and Reggie Bullock. We're going to put them in the gallows, and they're going to be done. They're going to be sleeping with the fishes. Then we're going to bring in somebody like John Collins. We're going to get the job done.
It's hard for me to argue with you in favor of taking Wilt Chamberlain out just because he was so dominant in his era. And I think it's unfair at certain points to hold a player in the era that he played against it, to hold said era against him.
There are eight teams in the NBA.
Still,
he was a seven-footer.
He tried to lead the league in assists 1 year and did.
You want to know the best thing that anybody did against Wilt Chamberlain was Bill Russell. Bill Russell let Wilt Chamberlain do what he was going to do. Those Celtics
teams, because they were friends.
Well, it wasn't.
But it was one of those relationships where I think Bill Russell was friendly with Wilt Chamberlain to get an edge.
They were friends. Yes, they were friendly for that reason. I also think Wilt was so selfish with the ball, and he was always going to get his, that Russell knew that if he let Wilt do what he was going to do and be selfish, they would absolutely win any series against them. Wilt Chamberlain has two championships. How many does Steph has? He has three right now.
Yeah.
He could be winning a fourth, depending on how the Warriors play against the Celtics. And you look at this Warriors dynasty and what they've done, and yes, absolutely, it's a dynasty. I've heard some people on, or seen some people on Twitter saying it's not. It's absolutely a dynasty.
Who's saying it's not?
Oh, I saw people last night. They're like, this Warriors team is good, but the Mavericks are just, they weren't ready, and the Celtics, whether they face the Celtics or the Heat, they're going down. This isn't a dynasty. They had two poor seasons because everybody was injured on their roster. Now they've got Klay back. They added Jordan Poole to that. They got rid of Kevin Durant and brought Andrew Wiggins in. Draymond Green all of a sudden is back to being Draymond Green. Like, it's wild how good they've been for as long as they've been good. They've been to six of the last eight Western Conference Finals.
Now, add a seventh in there,
yeah,
too.
This was the sixth. This was the sixth of the last eight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so they could have been in eight straight NBA championships, assuming that some of the guys that got banged up along the way are healthy.
Yep, and they've never lost in the Western Conference Finals. So, like, as a Mavericks fan, am I disappointed that the Mavs didn't play better? I think you go look at shot quality charts, and the Mavericks had amazing looks at shots. They just weren't hitting them. And you can't miss shots against the Warriors.
Really quick before we pivot into just a dynastic discussion. We saw Atlanta, a team that was carried by Trae Young, who is not Luka Doncic, go very far last year to the conference finals, and then they were ultimately extinguished by the eventual champion Milwaukee Bucks. This year, Atlanta did not look anywhere close to the same team that they were last year. The Mavericks, no matter what you want to say about the supporting cast around Luka, who did play, I would say, pretty well in these playoffs, especially considering they beat Phoenix, which was the best team in the NBA, you still have to look at Dallas and say, it is Luka and a bunch of other guys. How confident are you that the Mavericks will be back in this spot over the next couple of years?
Very.
Okay.
Very. And I really think it's because of the culture that's being built there. The Mavericks went away from Rick Carlisle. They went away from Donnie Nelson. They bring in Nico Harrison as the GM. They bring in Jason Kidd, who Jason Kidd has had some suspect, suspect head coaching chops.
If
so
you
far.
Said all of those three of those four things a couple of years ago, you're hiring Jason Kidd, gross. You're getting rid of Rick Carlisle, who most people consider to be one of the two or three best coaches in the NBA not too long ago.
Gross.
And you're getting rid of Donnie Nelson. You would say all of those things, and no, this is not going anywhere. And by the way, they traded Kristaps Porzingis, which at the time seemed like a weird move. But to your point, it does feel like something has reset in Dallas, and I mean, I'm glad that the Warriors won last night because I don't want to deal with the Dallas team being successful.
Well, yeah, that's because you just don't want me texting you and calling you talking about how amazing it is the Mavericks are in the finals. No. But here's Jason Kidd has instilled a culture of defense, which is something Dallas has never really had there. Mm-hmm. When they had Don Nelson as the coach, when they had Rick Carlisle, it was all offense first. The best that their defense has ever been was during that early 2011, 2010, that 2005 to 2011 run is the best their defense has been because they had coaches like Terry Stotts and guys like that who were helping out with some of the defensive coordinating. But they've always been an offensive minded team. Jason Kidd has turned them into a defense first mindset, and they're building a culture around Luka, which I think is incredibly important. They know Luka's the guy. They're building a bunch of 3-and-D guys around him. And I honestly think there's a couple of guys that are going to stay. I hope they bring back Jalen Brunson. I think the Knicks are going to go hard after him. He's going to get a lot of money. Funny story, if Jalen Brunson does get $24 million a year next year, he still wouldn't even eclipse the top five on the Warriors' payroll, by the way. That's how much money they have invested in their players.
And, I mean, you can see why. Even if these guys are getting a little bit older, Steph Curry still can destroy a game in a matter of moments.
He can break your heart. He can tear your soul out of your chest.
Klay Thompson... Yep. He finally had one of those games where you're like, okay, this is reminiscent of a Klay Thompson I used to know. Draymond Green is not looking to do anything with a basketball in his hands, but what he means to that team also, it's still there. And now, I mean, all right, as you said, Golden State's been to six of the last eight finals. They have won three titles along the way. And it has me thinking just about the best teams of the last two decades. I mean, they're pretty damn close to the top. There's only a couple of teams that you could say have more of a claim, and it's because they've just won physically more titles. The Boston Red Sox have been to four World Series over the last 20 years. They have won all four of them. The San Antonio Spurs have been to five NBA titles over the last 20 years. They have won four of them. The New England Patriots, of course, have been to nine Super Bowls since 2002, where their first one took place. They have won six titles. I guess if you want to go a little bit further and talk about individuals, LeBron James has four titles and 10 appearances. Tom Brady has seven Super Bowls and 10 appearances. But, I mean, that's where the Warriors are. And to add a little extra context and to sort of look at the Astros and say, hey, you guys got to pick things up. Yes, five straight ALCS appearances, three World Series appearances in the last 5 years, but just one title.
Yep.
You got to win one or you're going to be forgotten.
I definitely don't think they're going to be forgotten.
Not here.
Yeah. I don't think they'll be forgotten in general. I think I think a lot of people will remember. Now, if we're talking like 2005 Astros that made it to the World Series and were really good, that team's forgotten. But I don't think that they'll be forgotten. I think a lot of people will remember some of the players that played on this. Justin Verlander having some of his best seasons in Houston. Even if they don't win another title, they won't be forgotten, but they're not going to be remembered as a dynasty. They're not going to be remembered for how good they really were for the stretch that we've gone through with them. And they definitely need another title under their belt. People were talking about it yesterday. I was listening to a couple of discussions about the Astros. Are they a dynasty? Are they not a dynasty? I think it was Apollo Dez was on a show talking about it. It's like, no, they're the standard. Apollo Dez said, no, they're the standard. They're the standard of what you want to be as a baseball team. But until they win another championship, they're not a dynasty. And I 100% agree with that.
Counterpoint. How many World Series did the Braves make it to in the 1990s?
Oh, God. This
not trying to throw you off here. Yeah, just not, wild well, guess. I'm just trying wild
to
guess.
I have to all of my sports knowledge from the 90s when I was a kid was based off of what video game I was playing at the time. Four.
They went to five World Series in the 90s.
I was so close.
They won one.
Yeah.
Do you remember those teams?
Yeah, I remember those teams. I remember how good they were.
I sort of remember those teams.
I paid
teams.
More attention I remember to baseball Greg than Maddox. Anything else then.
Yeah. I remember Greg Maddox. I remember that Tom Glavin was on those teams, I think. I remember John Smoltz was on those teams. You know, I remember that, but they aren't really talked about anymore.
Right.
And they were an awesome team over that stretch. I mean, they just happened to be, unfortunately, playing at the same time as the New York Yankees. And they met the New York Yankees in a couple of those World Series. And until, I mean, obviously, they won the World Series against the Astros. Like, that was it. You know, they had done nothing after that. And, I mean, you look at that incredible stretch. It's so damn hard to do what Golden State's doing, what the Patriots, what the Spurs, and these other teams have been able to do. So I'm just saying there's a little extra pressure. That's what I think of when I see the Warriors getting in there, that, hey, the Astros, you gotta mind your P's and Q's a little bit.
Well, I totally agree with that. I think one of the things that the Astros have done that's very Warrior-esque is as guys leave the team, they're bringing in other dudes, whether it's through free agency or whether it's through their farm system, that can come in and step up and play those roles for them, right? Like George Springer left. Then all of a sudden you have Kyle Tucker coming in and producing. You have Carlos Correa leave. Now Jeremy Pena is on a ridiculous rate right now. He should probably be moved up in the lineup. Like, that's one of the things that they've done so well. That's what the Warriors have done. They've had how many different death lineups have the Warriors had in this run? They've had three. This is their third different death lineup. It's all based around Steph, Clay, and Draymond, but they've been able to fill in those other two pieces here and there when they've lost guys. And this is why I say, with the Warriors doing what they've done, the amount of titles that they've won, the way they've won, I think they're 16-2 all-time in playoff series. They've only lost two playoff series ever. That's nuts. That's why it's not just that and the fact that...
And one of them, I mean, if not for LeBron James, you know, stepping over Draymond Green, I mean, they win that series. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah, agreed.
And the other one was against the Raptors where Kevin Durant's Achilles tore.
That's true.
Klay Thompson tore his first ACL.
Also true. Forgot about that.
They never lost in the Western Conference.
No,
they've never lost
in the Western Conference Finals, ever. Never. The closest they ever came was against the Rockets until Chris Paul's hamstring blew up.
I think they're beating whoever comes out of the East.
Agreed.
As much as
Agreed.
I want the Celtics to win, I think this Golden State team, it's a machine. And I also think, too, there's got to be an intimidation factor. Yeah. You're a young team like Boston, or even like Dallas, too. You're going up against them. You're like, I mean, it's still the Warriors. That is something that you sort of have to sift through. And I imagine that's what some of those teams in the 90s going up against the Chicago Bulls were thinking to themselves. He is Josh Beard sitting in for Vanessa Richardson at Josh Beard Radio on Twitter. I am Paul Gallant. It is Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5. Did Moneyball really revolutionize baseball? One former Astro doesn't think so. Plus, we're introducing a fun show-long segment. We are doing a draft of all things Texas sports. I will explain how it works next.
ESPN 97.5. And Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Friday, got to get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend, partying. Yeah, it's Memorial Day weekend, so first off, I mean, obviously big thanks to all those who fought and died for this country. My family, a big military family. Josh, you served in the Air Force, and it's a heavy weekend for some, but definitely one that's worth celebrating. I got my little American flag shirt on right now. So earlier this weekend, I didn't catch this, I guess, on the broadcast, but it's been fun to have Jeff Bagwell doing color commentary for the last couple of Astros games. You know, you got one of the killer bees. Maybe Craig Biggio is going to step in. I like Bagwell because Bagwell, there's not a lot of energy when he's talking, but he does shoot from the hip.
Yeah.
And at some point during, I want to say this was the Tuesday night broadcast, at one point, Todd Callis set Jeff Bagwell up to go on this tangent about the Oakland A's, Billy Bean, and the idea of Moneyball.
I just think Moneyball is a farce.
Okay. You think the whole concept's a farce?
No, I think
the movie was.
No, I think even the concept, they had the three best pitchers in baseball. You could have sticked anybody out there. My son's 15-year-old team, they could have been out there with those three pitchers. And they get all this hype. I don't know.
Wow.
That's true. It's true.
You're debunking the whole Oakland A's Moneyball process.
Yes, I am.
You're saying Hudson, Mulder,
and Zito. And then run anybody else. The Braves won for 15 years with Maddox, Smoltz, and Glavin.
Yeah.
Mixed in some other great starters around them.
Yeah, they did.
They had to score three runs a game. And they won 15 years in a row. Why don't they call them the Moneyball team? Huh? What's the difference? I don't know. It's just my opinion only. Wow. For the next two nights, it's just my opinion, nothing that has to do with the Astros or anything.
None of these opinions reflect AT&T Sportsnet.
They don't.
Todd, funny. That's a funny zinger that he put in there. I like that they just let Jeff go on this one. And, you know, we talked about the Braves in the last segment. The Braves at least made it to the World Series. The thing that I've always been annoyed with the Oakland A's and everyone kissing Billy Bean's ass all the time has been, oh, so you made it to the playoffs and lost to the Red Sox that year? Congratulations, yeah. I guess. Like, they don't show that part of the movie. They show the 20-game regular season win streak. And to Bagwell's point, it's more nuanced than the way he's laying it out.
Right.
But if we're taking it from a results perspective, they had three great pitchers, and they did underachieve. They didn't really do anything with them before they did their eventual reconstruction, shipping off Miguel Tejada, Jason Giambi, etc.
Right. Well, and on top of that, they had really good scouting department too. So they had a great farm system with a lot of young guys that they could bring in, which that has nothing to do with Moneyball. That's just normal baseball scouting. You know, like the job that people have been doing for multiple decades. What is it? What's the past a decade? A century. Yeah. A century of people being like, hey, that guy could throw the ball real well. And then you bring him onto a team, he's like, oh, look, he's striking people out. Like, they've been doing that for years. And so, like, I think that there's definitely some, I think the Moneyball thing kicked in analytics, and we've talked about.
Well, there's the book that came out.
It kicked in a lot of things that teams are doing now. I think it's a tool that helps teams. But what they did was exactly what Jeff Bagwell, to his point, you have the three best pitchers in the league. That's what the Astros were so good because they had two of the best pitchers in the league plus great starters, and Bagwell was one of them.
It's a sport of haves and have-nots.
Yeah.
The Rays have done their own version of it too, and to their credit, they've actually made it to World Series. We're just talking about teams that don't have a lot of money. To the Rays' credit, I don't think that their deconstructions have been quite as just out in the open and ugly as that of the A's. Maybe it's because there's not as many people that care about the Tampa Bay Rays. But whatever the case, if you have money, you win. Or if you did great scouting and tanked for a while, you win. The Cubs and the Astros would be in the latter. The teams with money, the Yankees, less so the last two decades, but the Red Sox, the Dodgers, those are the teams that are there every single year. Moneyball helps. It is
not
smart,
everything,
but you're right. Yeah. And it is about getting good players, having great pitchers, much more than it is finding a decent player and somehow squeezing more out of him than other teams would expect.
Look at it in other sports. Let's take a look at analytics in other sports, how it's being used. In the NBA, okay. What are the three shots that everybody wants to get in the NBA? It's three-pointers, layups, and free throws. That's it. You talk to any NBA player, that's what they're trying to get. Teams try to build around that. That's why the Mavericks shot more threes than anybody else, because they were trying to get those threes. And then Luka, Brunson, and Dinwiddie would try to get to the basket.
That's why Golden State's where they're at.
Yeah. Who does that at the best level? Because they have the best players who do that.
And I mean, Boston, who I do think will end up winning this series, it's the same thing. Boston's been winning in these playoffs because they've been shooting threes.
Yep, and they have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown who can attack and get to the basket.
Right.
Then they've got Marcus Smart and all the other guys who can also shoot threes. Let's go to football. Let's go to analytics in football. Who is the most, right now, currently touted as the most analytics-driven coach in the NFL right now? It is Brandon Staley, 100%. He is considered the best analytics coach. They underachieved mightily this season,
yes,
because they were, and there were some decisions that he made that were really stupid in the moment, analytics based, but in the moment you got to have the feel of your players, right?
Right.
Like in football, I feel like analytics is always a tool. It's not the end all be all. It is a tool. But if your players, you got to think about psychology. If your players aren't in the right mindset, I don't know, probably don't go for it on 4th and 1 on the 25-yard line, because just kick the field goal, get the points, because you're getting demolished by the defense right now. Psychology plays a big part. So in baseball, it's the same thing. Moneyball helped. Analytics helps. It's definitely a tool that can be used to help build a team. But at the end of the day, it comes down to having the talent or not having the talent, which is analytics helps to find that. But it's not the end-all be-all.
I'm 100% with you on all of that. Now, that is Josh Beer sitting in for Vanessa Richardson.
Old man yells at cloud right now.
Up in Indianapolis.
Get off my lawn.
We got Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. All right. Look, it's a slow day. There's no Astros game. And, yeah, we're just – right now I'm making fun of Josh Beer because his beloved Mavericks are dead.
Okay.
And gone forever.
I don't know why we have to go there.
But I thought what could be fun is to do this thing where we do a draft. You can draft one figure – for each of these positions, and it has to be from current Texas either college programs or professional teams.
Oh.
Owner/president, general manager/athletic director, head coach, star player, roster, nickname, fan base. And you can do it in any particular order. We're going to do this at the back half of a lot of the coming segments. You just have to pick where your heart is. So, to start off this draft and to really throw Josh Beard on the spot, because now Josh Beard's like, oh, wait, hang on. You have the first overall pick. You can draft anyone. You just have to draft one at each of those seven criteria. Owner/president, general manager/AD, head coach, star player, roster, nickname, and fan base. And it has to come from the great state of Texas, something that is taking place currently.
Okay, was this in a specific sport or just like...
All sports?
Just all sports?
Literally everything.
Number one overall. Number one overall pick.
As long as it's in one of those criteria.
No team is anything without their star player. Doesn't matter who their head coach is. Doesn't matter who their GM is. Doesn't matter who their owner is. I don't care about the fan base or the nicknames. You have to have best player in all of sports in the state of Texas.
Oh, God. Jesus.
So that is why, with the number one overall pick in the great Texas draft,
Davis Mills,
I officially draft Luka Doncic to my team. Luka Doncic is hands down the best athlete, the best star player in the state of Texas. Out of all the professional organizations in the state of Texas, nobody can beat him. And prove me wrong. I defy you to prove me wrong.
Okay. All right. Look, that is a very smart way to go about things. Okay. I will go with pick number two. So, look, you want to have a functional organization. You want to have someone in charge of everything who is, I think, on top of it. You want to have a damn good financier. Someone who is going to give you a blank checkbook. But someone who does not meddle, someone who knows what he doesn't know. So I am taking, for my owner, Mark Cuban.
Oh, I almost went with Cube.
Because I feel like you have to have a good owner for things to work out in this league. Like, look at the Dolphins and how bad they've been for such a long time.
That's fair.
Steven Ross.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's mine. Hey, Sean Mapes.
Time out real fast.
Yes, go ahead.
So, Sean, Paul just said an owner that doesn't meddle. What was it that Mark Cuban was the most accused of over the last four or five seasons?
Oh, you mean the guy who was literally standing on the court during game three of the Western Conference Finals?
Oh, meddling. Well, he's been accused of meddling.
Think about this from this perspective. You could be meddling like Jerry Jones.
They've been comparing him to Jerry Jones in Dallas over the last three or four years.
Well, yeah, a lot of this is a bad pick.
A lot of decisions that he's made and the decision to go after some of these star free agents and that they failed on have been because of Mark Cuban.
Listen, I still feel like just given what the Mavericks have done,
that's fair.
The transformation that's taken place over the last couple of years, maybe he's changing.
Yeah, I think
he said as he justified his first pick.
I don't think you're wrong. I think bringing in Nico Harrison and Jason Kidd showed that he was willing to change and change the culture and do something different. So I don't think it's a bad pick.
I feel like as far as people who are in charge of their respective programs, like owners and stuff, and if we were talking college, I would imagine we would be talking boosters and school presidents and stuff. So it's a little bit nuanced when you get into those weeds. But if you're taking a look at across sports, is there an owner that you feel like has, I don't know, a better pulse on just where things need to be than him in this state?
No, I don't think so.
Because like Tillman Fertitta, I feel like with the Rockets, things have gotten cheap. I think with Jim Crane, there's a clear limit on what you can do.
Yeah, I agree. I think the one, well, you know what? No, I don't want to, I'm not going to answer your question. I'm not going to answer your question because I don't want anybody stealing my pick, Sean. I'm staring at you over there. I don't want anybody stealing my owner pick right now. I have a great pick.
Okay.
I think I'm going to surprise everybody, but I can't do it until we do the next pick.
All right, Sean, your first pick in this draft, that it can be from any of those seven criteria.
I was also going owner. As you were going, I was worried you were going to pick who I was going to pick, but you picked who is number two on my owner board. I am going with the man you just mentioned. I'm going with Jim Crane because he doesn't meddle.
Okay.
And he is a lot like Mark Cuban and a lot of other in the financing of the team.
He enables cheating, though, Sean.
Good. Maybe we'll win something.
See? Perfect. This is what Astros fans should say. That's Sean Mabes. Sean's going to have the next pick in this draft. So in the 7-round draft, you need an owner/president, yep, general manager or AD, a head coach, star player, roster, nickname, and fan base. We'll keep this going over the course of the show.
Can I tell you who, what owner I would have said now that both owners are picking?
How about when you're up, you can pick.
Okay.
Him.
All right, when you're up, you can pick him.
Up next, will Josh Beard pick an owner with his next pick? Sean Mapes is on the clock for another pick in this snake draft. Plus, this is the most obvious take that you would expect from a former NBA player. Which NBA player is saying that players are soft now? You'll find out next.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Guys are coming to the NBA. They're not fundamentally sound, you know, so all they do is practice threes, lift weights, get tattoos, and tweet and go on social media. That's it.
I mean, that is the most get off my lawn take of all time. That is former Laker great James Worthy, one of the best players in the NBA in the 1980s, big part of those Lakers championship teams, and he just went scorched earth on all of today's basketball players.
Every single one of them, yeah.
Right. They tweet. They are soft, I guess, is the consensus opinion that you are going to hear. They get tattoos, too, from every single person who used to play. Why is this the case? Why is there no appreciation from, specifically in basketball, for the guys playing today?
I don't know what it is. I think because the rules are different, because they're not allowed to hand check, they're not allowed to be as I say they're not allowed to be as physical, but I mean, look at some of the plays in the Celtics Heat series, some of the plays in the Suns Mavs, Warriors Mavs. They've played pretty physical, and a lot of people were finally noticing it last night. There's one thing that's happening with Luka because he's a bigger guy and he's a strong player. He kind of gets the LeBron James treatment. A couple other players have gotten this too, where they just don't get fouls called because they're big, and it looks bad whenever they run into somebody. It looks like it's kind of both parties that are giving the contact. But I think the NBA plays pretty tough today. By James Worthy standards, I am a professional NBA player, guys. That's what I do every day. I wake up. I just got a new tattoo not that long ago. I shoot threes. I tweet. And I lift weights a little bit kind of sometimes. Like, I'm pretty much a professional NBA player by James Worthy standards. I think it's ridiculous. As much as I was railing against analytics and Moneyball stuff, I think this is way worse by James Worthy, because I don't think that a lot of the guys who played when he played would be able to handle the speed, precision, and just pure talent of today's game.
I think you would see a lot of guys that would look like James Harden, and not to say that they would be frumpy. I just think that they would be gassed.
Yeah.
Because those guys had fun in the 80s. We're going to act like those 1980s Lakers teams weren't doing a lot of sniff, sniff, sniff every night. Like, they weren't just, like, you know, banging everything that moved.
How about James Worthy, a man who got arrested in Houston for soliciting a prostitute the day of a game?
Right, yeah.
Fundamentals. Listen, the fundamentals were sound, okay? She's the one that's calling out the fundamentals. I'll say this about today's players. I do think that sometimes they are a little soft. I think that flopping has gotten worse as time has gone
on. Agreed.
I think that there is a little bit of entitledness, and I do think that too many guys are shooting threes. But at the same time, I do think that a lot of these players who are coming into the pros are coming in a lot more professional than they were back in the day. I think that a lot of these guys, because of the way that AAU basketball has kind of transformed the way that this sport works, yes, they might be a little bit more individual-minded and maybe not as good in a system, but I think a lot of these guys have been approaching basketball like it's a job since they were like in their teens.
Yeah. Yeah, my brother played AAU ball for a few years, and he finally quit because he got burnt out. But, I mean, he was 6'8", pretty good, solid player. And if you met my brother, you'd be like, how are you guys related? I'm like,
you're a big guy.
He's 6'8" with my size.
That's
he's
nuts.
Massive. Yeah.
That's nuts.
But he moved like a small forward. He had the footwork and the shot of a small forward. We're like the movie Twins with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, but he's Arnold and I'm definitely Danny DeVito, and it feels real bad. I'm going to steal a car. But like, I watched him play AAU ball, and these coaches, and I have my feelings about AAU and blue chip stuff, right? But these coaches, for the most part, they teach them to treat it like a job. He was in high school being taught to treat it like a job. They had to wear a suit to their games that they played. Their coach made them wear suits. They treated it like a business. And so they are a lot more professional coming in. If these guys had to play a more physical style of basketball, I have no doubt in my mind they'd be able to do it. What they're doing in today's game is they're taking advantage of the rules the way they are. And if they had to play a more physical style, if they had grown up playing a more physical style, I have no doubt in my mind they'd be able. The transition of players now to the old game versus the old players to today's game, I think it'd be so much easier for today's NBA players to transition to an old, more physical style versus trying to defend Steph Curry four feet off of the three-point line, just nailing threes all the time.
The way I've always looked at it is, if you were to put a player from each era in a time machine, move them to the era that they're talking down about, and they have to play that night in a game, the guy that is playing today would, I think, do much better than the guy that was playing back in the day. Not to say that, hey, if they get a little bit of seasoning under their belt in that world, that things couldn't change, but I do think on that night they would do better.
Do you know who I think would be the best transition from the old physical style of basketball? The person who would have the easiest time transitioning and would be a legitimate, crazy superstar in today's game would be Reggie Miller. I know everybody gets annoyed listening to him talk during some of these playoff games and during some of these broadcasts, but I think Reggie Miller could make the transition very, very easily because he was a great 3-and-D guy.
I'd want to see Giannis back in the day. I want to see Giannis go up against that physicality.
Yeah.
Giannis is basically a fullback playing basketball right now.
Yeah, he's a tight end.
It's nuts. All right, we're going to continue our great Texas sports draft, where in this draft, at any point, you just have to draft one of each. You have to draft a coach, a GM, a player, an owner, a roster, a nickname, and a fan base. Sean Mapes, you had the last pick. You picked Jim Crane as your owner. Who are you taking next?
I'm going to the GM/AD line because I feel like this is the lightest of the group, and you'll see how light it is because I'll take Nick Caserio.
Nick Caserio.
Ooh, I like that. I like that.
Nick Caserio is going in the second round. Okay.
He's done nothing to disqualify him from this getting picked this high, and some other guys have. And if I get stuck with any of these other guys, it would ruin my team.
Okay. Look, there's a lot to be proven with him. So, I don't know. I feel like...
He's got a couple good drafts under his belt.
There's another general manager that I would have gone there, but I'm not going to tip my hand. Even though you are giving me the pick that I'm about to make, you gave it to me before the show. Because there's only a couple of star players in this state right now that are just transcendent, and Josh Beard already took one of them, and I'm obsessed with this guy, so sorry, Sean Mapes, I have to take him. I'm taking Micah Parsons as my star player. And, Sean, you even brought it up before the show.
I did mention Micah Parsons.
The guy could play any sport. Who knows what this team is going to be? Micah Parsons, baby. Give me my Micah.
I love that. That probably would have been my second pick after Luka.
So you're up, Josh Beard. Okay. You took, with your first pick, Luka Doncic. I took Mark Cuban, and Sean took Jim Crane. Now he has Nick Caserio.
So I'm not going to take an owner here. You two boobs already took both your owners. And so
There's no owners left. That's why.
So I get there definitely is. So I'm going to wait until the very end. Whoa. Let's not ruin
can't believe
the
you passed on
yet.
Davis Mills for Luka.
Don't worry. Oh, get out of here. Get out of here. Bryce Young's going to be the starter in 2023 anyway. I'm going to go with GM as well. I'm going to go with GM here. I'm going to follow Sean's lead. I'm going to go with Will McClay.
Oh, yes.
I'm skipping Good. Every other GM. I'm skipping Good. James Click. I'm skipping Stephen Jones. I'm skipping Jerry Jones. I'm going to go with Will McClay. Will McClay was the catalyst of some of the best roster moves and personnel decisions that the Cowboys have made until Jerry Jones took the job back over. Will McClay.
Oh. Is he still in the organization?
He is.
Still qualified.
He's currently the vice president of player personnel for the Cowboys, essentially the assistant GM.
Big mistake here.
No.
You left the guy on the board.
This is the perfect Raphael Stone?
No,
is that who it is?
I'm not going to say.
Oh, I'm Jack Easterby? Is that?
Yeah, it's Jack Easterby. Damn it. Damn it.
No, I think Will McClay is a lot of the best players that they have, a lot of the moves that they've made, he was the guy that really convinced Jerry and Steven to make those moves, and I think a lot of the success that the Cowboys have had, at least in the NFC East, and the talent that they put together has been largely because of Will McClay. He's great at scouting talent. He's a great player guy. And so I think he'd be the perfect GM. He needs to be a GM somewhere. The problem is the Cowboys pay him so much money, nobody's ever going to be able to pay him enough money to actually lead the organization to be a GM somewhere else. But Will McClay is my GM. 100%.
So the problem with my draft board is that for Cowboys GM, I put down Steven / Jerry Jones. Yeah. I have no idea who this
I would
guy
have too.
Is.
I would have too.
That's just ignorance, poor scouting on my part.
I have insider knowledge.
Josh Beard, Sean Mapes behind the glass. Josh is in for Vanessa Richardson, who's up in Indy for the Indy 500. She's going to give us a complete breakdown of the Indy 500 because there are so many days that she's taken to celebrate it, which, you know what, good for her again. I am Paul Gallon. Up next on Vanessa and Gallon, we're going to continue our great Texas sports draft. And what would you do if you're the Baltimore Ravens with Lamar Jackson right now? He hasn't shown up for OTAs. Contract negotiations have stalled. Would you give him the extension? Would you trade him? What would you do? We'll talk about that next.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7. That's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.
Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Today is the greatest.
Oh, that is the worst Billy
Corgan. Wow. The Dallas Mavericks are over. Josh Beard is sad.
That didn't
they
even rhyme.
They aren't going to play another game.
These aren't even the lyrics.
Until October.
At least do a Billy Corgan voice if you're going to do this.
That is.
No, you. Billy Corgan today. Is. That's not even close. You have to sing like you're pooping. It's like, today is my great. That's how you have to do it.
No, he's like really soft-spoken.
He is not soft-spoken at all.
It's me, Billy Corgan.
That sounds nothing like
it. I sound just like this. This song's about.
You sound like
crippling
Butters
depression.
From South Park.
Yeah, I know. Listen, all my voices eventually sound like either I'm Adam Sandler in a Adam Sandler movie or Eric Cartman. What do you want from
yeah,
me?
Yeah, it's Cartman. Fair, it's anyone from South Park and Adam Sandler.
And Pearl Jam, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and Eddie Vedder. You can do Eddie Vedder.
Eddie Vedder all the time.
Unless I'm talking like I'm Brian Gumbel, which is
I don't
one
know,
that's
working. I don't know what that was.
I don't know. I was like a Tucker Carlson, Brian Gumbel.
That was definitely.
I don't know. I'm not good with impressions, but I do them anyway, everybody. Because you know what?
What are streets?
What are the Ravens going to do with Lamar Jackson? Lamar Jackson, not showing up for OTAs, has been pretty difficult to negotiate per all that we are hearing. That's a guy that I would imagine the Ravens want to lock into a long-term extension, but a guy who I think is the best running quarterback I've ever seen, including, yes, Michael Vick, a guy who obviously is so damn important for that offense. There are questions about his throwing ability. I think that they are a little bit overstated, but I don't really like the offense that he's in. I'm not the biggest Greg Roman fan. Right. If you're Baltimore, what do you do with Lamar Jackson, especially considering you got to talk to his mom to negotiate an extension with him? And it feels like that has been, at least based off of the whining that we have heard coming out of Ravens camp, like pulling teeth.
Right. I don't think it's a concern that he's not at OTAs. And these
I don't either, by the way.
Yeah, these contract negotiations are always really tricky, especially with quarterbacks. The Cowboys went through it, although it wasn't nearly as like there wasn't any displeasure, there weren't any skipped OTAs, anything like that. But the Cowboys went through it with Dak Prescott not that long ago. And I would be somebody who would say that Lamar Jackson is above the Dak Prescott line of quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, I would probably...
Interesting.
I think they're closer than a lot of people realize, but I'd put Lamar slightly above Dak a little bit.
Who would you trust more, though? So your team's down by a touchdown and you need a touchdown. There's less than 2 minutes to go. Who do you trust between Dak and Lamar? Because well, as much as I want to say Lamar, I would say Dak.
I just saw Dak slide the timeout in a playoff game recently. And I have seen Lamar Jackson. Look, Lamar Jackson in some clutch moments has been incredible. He's done some, I hate to use this term, this is a very Josh James term, but he's done some absolutely electric stuff.
He did have that rushing touchdown against the Titans, which was pretty clutch.
It's a toss-up. I think it's a push, probably, most likely, realistically.
God, but I forgot about that slide.
I watched Dak slide the timeout on that.
That was Mike McCarthy's fault. Just blame him.
It's 100%
always easy to blame Mike McCarthy.
Mike McCarthy is awful. But
that was Dak's fault.
Lamar Jackson is in that like top 10-ish realm, somewhere between like 7 and 11, right? And so I'd absolutely, you pay that. You pay the money for that guy because where else are you going to go? I like what Tyler Huntley did when Lamar Jackson was out last year. But, like, I don't feel great about being like, nah, never mind, Lamar, we're not paying you the money. Hey, Tyler, you're our quarterback now. Like, I don't feel great about
that.
No,
I don't either.
And then look at all these teams that are searching for quarterbacks, and they fail, and they fail, and they fail. So he's going to get paid at some point. This is just a game that always gets played with quarterbacks. I'm not worried about OTAs. The thing with Marquise Brown, here, this tells me everything. Is he annoyed that they're losing some talent at wide receiver? For sure.
Jackson, right.
Lamar Jackson. But who has he been working out with all offseason? It hasn't been Marquise Brown. All I've seen are videos of Lamar Jackson working all offseason with Rashad Bateman. And I am a massive, massive Rashad Bateman stan. I think he is going to be an incredible wide receiver in the NFL.
Why do you think that? Because we haven't seen it.
Well, we haven't seen it. In the times that we saw him last year, after he came back from that injury, he was very, very good. But at that point, Marquise Brown was already getting the lion's share of the targets. Mark Andrews was getting the lion's share of the targets. And they don't really pass. They're not a pass-happy offense. They don't pass the ball a lot. I mean, I think Marquise Brown got like, it was like 26 or 27% of the passing share on 146 targets last year from Lamar Jackson. So Rashad Bateman, when we saw him in college, he's one of the most highly touted, especially from a scouting and analytics standpoint, one of the most highly touted receivers we've seen coming out of college. And I think if you have him, Mark Andrews, and some other pieces, he and Mandrews are going to be the guys who get the lion's share of the targets. I think that from a route running perspective, from an athleticism perspective, from definitely a hands perspective, as Marquise Brown had the fourth or fifth most drops in the NFL last year, I think Rashad Bateman is a much better option. And just watching his college tape, watching what he did in the NFL last year, I think it's better to have him as your wide receiver one moving forward, especially on the contract that he's on, than Marquise Brown. And Lamar Jackson's been working with him all offseason. So, yeah, displeasure in losing Marquise Brown, but I think Rashad Bateman is the better option out of those two. And you get to save money in the process. You don't have to pay Hollywood that next contract. It's just good for them overall. I think this all gets wrapped up before the season.
I don't think that they will be as injured as they were last year.
I don't think so either.
Because that was just an absolute disaster for them. And I do think with the salary cap ballooning the way that it does every single year, that it's going to be easy for them to get him on the books. I would like them to do something about offensive coordinator. I do not think Agreed. Greg Roman is good. I think that Greg Roman has found ways to use mobile quarterbacks, but he does not find ways to adapt to the adaptations to the way that a guy like a Colin Kaepernick played. And I think you're seeing it to an extent with Lamar Jackson. All right, the great Texas sports draft, where you have to draft a head coach, you got to draft an owner, you've got to draft a star player, you've got to draft a all-around roster, a nickname, a fan base, an owner slash president. I think we said GM or an athletic director. Can be from college sports, can be from professional sports. Right now, Josh Beard, you are on the clock after taking in the first round Luka Doncic with the first overall pick as your star player and Will McClay as your general manager from the Dallas Cowboys.
Sneaky great pick that is going to absolutely take this, skyrocket this team into many rafters of championships. Now I'm going to go fan base. There's one base in this state better than any
third
fan base.
That
is better than any fan base. I'm going fan base third round because this fan base brings the noise. This fan base is ride or die. They love their team. They get hyped for their team. No matter what's going on, they're better than any fan base in this entire state. And I'm taking the Astros fan base.
Oh,
I'm taking the Houston Astros fan base.
What a turn!
You cannot have a successful team without a fan base that has your back no matter what decision is made.
Oh,
and I think the Houston Astros fan base, more than any fan base in any city in this entire huge state, the Astros fan base is by far the best. Cowboys fans, annoying. Texans fans, they believe a little bit too much in Davis Mills right now for my taste.
I think they're all beaten down and jaded.
Mavs fans are too busy touching Chris Paul's mom. not doing that. Spurs fans are annoying. Rockets fans don't show up. Are there Rockets fans? There's Rouge and who else? It's Rouge and like a couple of guys. It's Rouge and David Wiener. Those are the only Rockets fans.
Rowdy Maya.
Yeah, there you go. Tilman Fertitta, I guess, is probably a Rockets fan too. That's the whole fan base. But there's no fan base in this state that even comes close to rivaling the Astros.
Nice job pandering with that.
It's not pandering. It's true. It's honest. I need a good fan base.
Yeah, gotcha.
Whatever.
You know what? I like it. Set me up though. I thought for sure you're gonna pick the Texas A&M Fighting Aggies.
College. No. They annoy me. The Aggie fan base annoys me.
Okay,
man.
Good. Because, they do annoy me, too.
Don't worry. We're going to the Aggies later on, though.
All right, look. This guy's still on the board. And I can't believe he's still on the board because, you know, we're talking about general managers. And there has certainly been a lot of conversation about this organization along the way. But, I mean, this pick's obvious. What has this team done with scouting? What has this team done with development? What has this team done over its entire history? R.C. Buford. That's my general manager, San Antonio Spurs, baby.
Oh, no.
Nick Caserio was off the board before him. Incredible. Unbelievable. Give me my R.C. Buford. I want to find the next Manu Ginobili. I want to find the next Kawhi Leonard. I want me some R.C.
Timeout. R.C. Buford's not their GM anymore. It's Brian Wright. He took over in 2019.
But he's the CEO. He has the power over him.
Fine.
It's like when I think it was Gary Kubiak. He went over to the Minnesota Vikings, and he's technically not the offensive coordinator, but he's the offense.
Yeah, I almost went with R.C. Buford over Will McClay, so I'm a little sad that I didn't take him.
He is the CEO, if you want to be very specific about it.
You know, the vice president of player personnel, so I have to allow this, or else I would try to parse this away from you.
It is tricky. I mean, sure, if you really wanted to. I mean, what is Jeff Luhnow doing these days? Is that allowed? I don't know. I mean, technically, if he lives in Houston, you might be able to pull that one up. All right, the great Texas sports draft. Sean Mapes, you are on the clock for your next pick.
This is a tough one because star player, I can wait until the end because y'all both picked him. Roster, I don't feel good about really any of them. Roster, I'm just saving until the end, too. So I guess I'm going to keep going down the org chart. I've already picked the owner, picked the GM. I guess I'll go head coach. And I'm also going with the San Antonio Spurs head coach, greatest coach in the state.
That's a good one.
Greg Popovich. Also, doesn't matter what sport we end up playing, I'm sure he'll figure it out.
Yeah, same. That's how I would feel about Greg Popovich coaching a football team. I'd be like, I think he'll figure it out.
He was in the Army? Football's like Army?
Yeah.
Have him go at it.
Totally the same, the Army on Memorial Day weekend. You know, great. You know, good comparison, Sean, as we
respect the truth.
Well, that's true. One of the things that I think Greg Popovich does really, really well is he relies on his assistants a lot. And if he did go coach in football, I think he would do a good job he does a great job of managing ego and managing people, right? And he does a good job of not intimidating. Well, he does do a good job of intimidating reporters, but he does a good job of hyping people up and things like that. I think he could rely on his offensive and defensive coordinators to worry about scheme.
I do wonder about guys like him going forward, just given the way things went with Kawhi. Where it does feel like you have to coddle stars a little more, but Kawhi is a weird dude.
Yeah, I think he's a little different than some of the other stars that we've seen where he is He's a special head case.
Also, that's not the kind of culture we're building over here, all right?
Love it.
Sean Mapes behind the glass, Josh Beard in for Vanessa Richardson. It's Vanessa and Gallant. We're doing a great Texas sports draft. So we are three rounds of the book. We're going to keep this going as the show goes along. But coming up next on this Friday, got to get down on Friday. Look, I'm not going to lie. It's fun to see Dallas lose. Sorry, Josh. I know you're hurting a little bit with your Mavs down.
All right.
But what are the other cities that you like to see lose? Dallas is the obvious one. Here in Houston, what other cities do you like to see lose? We'll talk about that next right here at ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today.